We Have Issues is a weekly podcast full of reviews of comics and oversharing. We use grown-up language to make very childish jokes. You can find the show at wehaveissues.net, as well as anywhere else where average to not too bad podcasts can be found. How are you two? Are you good?
Yep.
All good.
Better than I was last week.
Yeah. Oh, you weren't well.
Yeah. Finally got the cold that everyone had. I was like, yes, I've defeated it, and then got it, and then was really, really poorly, and then it lingered. I've still got part of it now, just nose and sinus headaches, but...
When you said the cold, it did sound like there was a capital T, capital C.
It floated down the office, skipped me, got everyone behind me, and then lassoed back and got me.
It really wanted you.
Yeah, it did. It was like...
Maybe it just knew that it had to, like, get everyone around you before it could get you.
To lure me into a false sense of security so my immunity would drop slightly.
It's weird. I think it's kind of strange for me because... I don't remember. Do you remember for ages I couldn't hear anything out of one of my ears because of the cold? I don't know when I started being able to hear again, but now I can hear again.
Oh, that's good.
It's not an interesting story.
Yeah, that's good.
But it just, so people are talking about colds and I'm like, God, yeah, my cold's been going on forever. And then I'm like, no, apparently I stopped having a cold at some point, but didn't notice. That's weird, isn't
it's
it?
It's just when you suddenly realise you're better. You're like, oh my God, I've been ill for so long. Now I'm better.
And then you get a cold again.
I'm no longer ill. Better is a strong word. Do we mean just generally or in terms of ill? Oh, yeah, okay. Well, I'm probably not germ-free, but yeah, I no longer have a cold. I feel weller. Paul Weller.
I was about to say.
But I'm, because we're both as fucking stupid, John. I think that's what that is. We're both going to make the same crappy joke. Oh, that's broken.
Are we recording now?
Yeah, we're recording.
Oh, okay.
This is
just
how it works.
Into it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That'll teach you not to pay attention.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning. John was going to be here anyway. That's John. The other voice you're hearing is John. He's so clearly not James. That sounded like a value judgment. I just mean you've got different voices.
I kind of hope so.
Us smaller people have different voices from giants.
That is true.
Like,
we project less.
Yeah. So John was going to be here anyway, but James is taking a week off because it's his birthday.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to James. He was 40.
Yeah.
So he's younger than me.
He's 10 years older than me.
You're only 30.
He's 4
aren't
years
you?
I'm gonna be older than me.
I'm not even 30 yet.
Oh,
4 months, I think, until I'm 30.
So weird. This has become, this is basically, listeners will be aware, become the, wow, people have really different ages podcast.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
has,
I noticed this. There's, because obviously, like,
Jessie's really young,
yeah.
And Laura's...
I think she's in between.
Yeah, she's
in between
Jessie
and Jane.
Yeah,
probably. It's very difficult. I haven't asked Laura her age because you're not supposed to, are you? I've tried looking her up on Wikipedia and IMDb, and she's not in either of those places. And that's where I find out about people. So neither of your Wikipedia entries are really, really light. They don't exist.
The thing with my Wikipedia entry is that effectively it was written in 1927, but there was no internet to put it on. So, alas, it's never
it's in
been
the British Library
yet. Yeah,
it's in the British Library where everything is, and in the homes of a few collectors.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually in a book of its own. It's just been, it's a piece of paper that's been folded into a copy of Lady Chatterley's Lover, I think. One of the really sexy bits.
Okay.
Yeah. When she shows her ankle.
Does that happen?
I don't know.
I've never read it. I just know it's supposed to be really
you
sexy.
You said sexy bit.
It's like 50 Shades of Gardening or something.
The ankle bit does sound pretty much more racy than most of the stuff that's apparently in 50 Shades Grey. I thought it's relatively podcasty. I thought I had read and heard everything I could possibly stand to hear about 50 Shades of Grey. And then I listened to this week's Travis Bickle on the Riviera, which is a film review podcast, and Tucker Stone on 50 Shades of Grey. The film is just inspired and brilliant.
Have you read any 50 Shades of MODOK?
No, that's bringing it around to comics. Well done.
No, John. There isn't. It was pointed out to me by somebody at Comic Club, and it is effectively 50 Shades of Grey, but you replace Christian Grey with MODOK. And I'm a big fan of MODOK. I think he's one of the better Marvel villains. And genuinely, it's just, I read about the first two paragraphs and I was in stitches. The phrase skateboard sized tongue crept into it.
I think the thing about the book and the film is they sound like they're slightly beyond parody as well. So a lot of the stuff that you read in 50 Shades of MODOK probably wasn't that different from what it was in the original thing. Mm-hmm. There is apparently a bit in the film.
They probably just control left and replaced.
There is apparently a bit in the film where Christian Grey says, "Well, I guess I'm just 50 Shades of fucked up." And his name's Christian Grey, therefore 50 Shades of... Do you see?
Yeah.
Because it's a refer... That's probably where the name of the book came from. It sounds great. The problem with Travis Bickle on the Riviera, by the way, is that quite often they are savage about films, but they do it in such a way that it always makes me feel like the film might be quite interesting anyway. So we've watched a lot of films just because they slacked them off, and I've loved every single one of them. We watched Olympus Has Fallen because of them.
Great film.
It's so bloody.
When I'm ill, I get into sort of really bad movie mode. And I really, really wanted to watch it, but I really don't like Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
And the first 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes, where it's just like, oh, if this isn't explosions by now, I don't want to know. It's just Gerard Butler being Gerard Butler.
There is a lot of, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, Jane. There's a lot of Gerard Butler being
How much do I have to skip to get to explosions?
But he's in every single explosion.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. I can cope with him and explosions.
It is basically 24 with a different actor.
What happens is there's the initial
and without
bit.
The clock.
Initial bit which sets up all of the emotional stakes.
How long is that? Like 13
minutes? It's about 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, oh, I can tell you pretty much what happens is
I just want the explosions.
He's the president's right-hand man. No, he's not. He's the president's head secret service agent. And he is there when the first lady, they're in a car crash. They're in two cars, and the first lady's car goes over a bridge, and he's there. And so he stops being the president's main secret service person. But apparently there are no hard feelings. So even though it's setting up the emotional stakes, it's just that the president can't have him there. He knows that you're told this by characters in it. He knows that the president knows that it wasn't his fault, but it's just all too raw and he can't have him there. So he's basically, it sets up that he used to be the main secret service guy. Now he's
unemployed.
On the ropes and out of it. But at the same time, everyone still thinks he's amazing. So really, it's not like Jack Bauer. No, well, or him. Yeah, or Jack McClane. John McClane. John McClane. It's not like John McClane or Jack Bauer, where they actually are, people don't trust them and stuff. The whole way through that film, people are telling you that Gerard Butler is the most amazing person and he's going to, so you know that like, nobody believes. The only people who don't believe that he's going to fix everything are the terrorists. So it's very weird. Well, no, the president still thinks he's a good agent. He just can't have him around because every time he looks in Gerard Butler's face, he sees his dead wife.
That's just messed up.
The whole film is just weird. but we liked it because it is one of the most bloody films I've ever seen.
If you ever just want to see, again, it goes back to the whole thing of when you play video games and you just want to throw the character off ledges.
This is something that John was discussing before the
podcast.
If you
want to see people get killed, just watch Olympus Has Fallen. It's
well,
just literally 90 minutes of death.
Once the initial emotional bit is done, it's pretty much that.
Oh,
so you should push through
about 10 minutes.
10, 15 minutes.
It's like Clover
If you're really that bored, just go and make coffee and come back and it'll be ready.
Okay.
A cookie. You'll be good.
It does that excellent thing where there's a big killing scene where you think, well, that's just to tell us that these guys are bad dudes. They're killing loads of people. But normally in these films, that's it. And then it's just the main guy going after the terrorists. But then it's so murdery. There's so much murder.
Good. As long as it's relentless, that's fine.
Yeah, it's pretty relentless.
Good.
If you want relentless violence, just watch the Raid films.
I have seen the Raid films. They're good, though.
Yeah,
I want
I
to be well oh, and okay. functioning to enjoy those.
Yeah.
Actual skill and time and effort and thought went into those films. I want films that wow, the writer was feeling as rough as I was when he made the film.
I think if you push through Olympus Has Fallen, that's White House Down is basically the same film, but it's charming.
Yeah, I've not seen White House Down.
It's quite charming. Channing Tatum is one charming motherfucker.
Channing Tatum, I think, is one of the most underrated actors at the moment. He's really good at doing a lot of different types of film.
Also, I like his face.
I'm sure he likes your face.
I do quite like his face. It's a nice face. So anyway, happy birthday, James.
Yes.
Yes.
John, how have you been? We haven't seen you in a little while.
Yeah,
we haven't
right.
seen you in a little while. This is fucking weirdly formal, isn't it? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Have you been on the new show at all?
Yeah
I've been there a few times.
Should we talk about comics? Should we just charge in and talk about comics? Yeah. I think we've bought a few of the same ones, so that's good, so we can talk about stuff. John, what have you got there?
First of all, I have issue number 26 of Saga. Anyone else buy this?
I haven't read it.
Oh, okay.
Don't spoil it.
I will attempt to maneuver my way through it without mentioning things that happen in it.
Don't say when such and such a person dies, but I won't tell you who, because that would be a spoiler, because saying that someone dies is a spoiler.
Here is an attempted spoiler-free review. The cover is blue.
Is anyone...
On both sides. It has the word Saga on the front, which helps when you're looking for it.
He's
as well
being
as
facetious.
Fiona Staples and Brian K. Vaughan, who are the artist and writer of the book.
She's credited first, that's cool.
Yeah, and as per usual, her artwork is nice.
It
has colours.
Just nice.
Well,
it isn't a spoiler to say what you thought of it, John.
No. Fiona Staples' artwork is lovely. I will stop being
facetious.
Thanks, that's the word.
Are there any points? The only thing I really care about is, are there any points where someone is getting a blowy on someone else's face?
And did you
actually
notice?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Not everyone noticed, did they?
Actually, kind of, yeah.
Cool, okay. Well, then it's one of the highlight episodes issues.
Not even so. It's a very good issue in terms of it's difficult because, obviously, it's chapter 26. We're now two issues into the fourth season.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't read chapters 1 through 25, this might not be the best jumping on point.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it continues to, I mean, there's been a period of time between the end of the third season, the beginning of the fourth season, where events have clearly taken place and the book is slowly revealing why things are the way they are. And
why the status quo has changed.
Yeah,
okay.
Why the status quo has changed. The thing is, I like Saga a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I like it so much, I was actually surprised when I met someone who didn't like it, because I thought... I didn't realise that people didn't like it. It just never occurred to me.
There seems to be a consensus around it, which can be misleading, doesn't there? That, like, it's that sort of a book. And it's the book that's put a certain sort of book image on the map and stuff like
that. It's kind of... I mean, the thing is, at the moment, if... You'd ask me what the biggest titles on the shelves were. This would probably be in what I consider the top three. It's really good. It's, like I said, if you've read chapters 1 through 25 and you like them, the chances are you've probably already got your comic shop putting aside chapter 26. So, I don't know. I don't need to tell you to go and buy it. If you haven't read Saga before, go and read issue 1. I think it's free on Comixology. If you like that, issues 2 through 25 and 26 would also be to your liking.
If you like the first one, just buy the deluxe edition. Have you seen it? It looks lovely.
Yeah, it's lovely. And it's got a picture of a boob on the front.
Although, to be fair, the nipple's hidden, so it could just be... It is a boob, but it doesn't look like a boob. They've got round the whole
breastfeeding
thing.
It kind of does. There's a baby on the end of it.
Yeah, but babies attach themselves to anything. They don't care. They're like limpets. Oh, maybe I'm thinking of limpets.
No, you're thinking
of
babies.
Yeah, babies do it as well, don't they? They're like nature's suction cups. Although, strictly speaking, suction cups are nature's suction cups. Let me work on this, okay?
What about goats? Baby goats like to suck everything too.
Yeah, baby goats.
So, yeah, and also, if you have baby goats, don't let them near your issue of Saga, because they will suck on it.
Or anything, just don't let them near anything you don't want sucked on, basically. and put anything you do want sucked on as near to them as possible.
Oh, isn't that some kind of child abuse? A kid abuse. Ha, kid abuse.
Kid abuse if it's a baby goat. Yeah,
kid abuse.
Does it count as... I mean, it's animal abuse. Which is the greater crime? Is it the animal abuse or the abuse of a minor goat?
Can I just check? Are you asking for a friend or...
No, I'm just curious. I've got a very curious mind.
I think both.
Both?
Yeah.
Both crimes are
and
equally
also,
as bad,
you know,
under
like,
the Lord of under
morally,
the eye of God.
Pretty horrific too.
And they're even worse under the eye of Sauron.
Yeah. I think it's morally bad to sexually abuse any goat, but because the issue of consent, the question of consent is always going to be hanging over that.
Yeah.
I think generally abusing anything sexually is bad.
Yeah.
I think people seeing the sucking motion might think that's a green light. It's not.
No, it definitely, no, it isn't. No, it isn't.
They're like cardigans. They like eating cardigans.
Like llamas do.
Yeah.
Fucking
what?
The llama
is that
thing.
Why they're no longer about?
What?
The cardigans.
What? What?
There was that llama thing last week, and I don't know if you guys remember, but I've got a real issue with llamas. And there was a thing about a llama that was just, apparently llamas escaped and everyone on the internet was talking about llamas for ages. Just, I feel that I'm saying llamas a lot and it's
you
just, I'm getting
can I just ask one
fear.
Thing?
What?
Did it alarm you?
People were shouting llama, llama, llama. And I didn't like it. So.
You can get baked goods in shapes of llamas.
I don't like, why would you, I mean, I imagine you can get baked goods in the shape of almost
anything,
can't you?
Specifically llamas, you know?
Can you? That's weird, though.
It is weird. They're called baked llamas.
Can most people tell the difference between a llama and a camel and an alpaca?
Or an ostrich. I'm sure people get ostriches.
Yeah, ostriches are like llamas, but with four legs. No, the other way around.
See? It's easily done.
It is very confusing. One thing leads to another. You've got to have a system, Harry Hill would say.
So don't be inappropriate with animals.
Yeah, try not to have sex with any creature that hasn't given you... Don't try. No, actually, this is one of those things where you can do better than just trying, I think,
you
listener.
You just not do it. Yeah.
And now on the BBC.
So Saga's still good. You think if you like the first issue...
Well, yeah, if you like Saga, you're going to be reading it and you're going to be buying it. I think it's at a point now, it is, like I said, this kind of feels like it's leveled out slightly from the huge peak that it had at the beginning, and now it's going into character development.
Mm-hmm.
And the little baby who is the narrator has just got so cute. So just this cute little alien toddler.
Hazel.
Yeah, Hazel, that was it. And she's lovely, and she makes the story really interesting. And also, I think the covers are just lovely. Always, every month, the cover just feels like, here is something that you could quite easily put on your wall. If you put it on your wall, then you wouldn't be able to read it.
I think with a book like that, where it's one ongoing story, and it's the same creative team, and it's going to be the same creative team the whole time, it is useful to check in every now and then, because someone who hasn't started reading it might think, well, does it get shit? That's what people think, isn't it? When you're talking about an ongoing thing, it's like, is it going to pay off? Am I going to invest time? As if, like, just the fact that you enjoyed each issue as you were going wasn't enough. Everyone wants the moon on a fucking stick. So what you're basically saying is, so far it looks like the moon on a stick.
Yep, this is the moon
is still
on a stick.
On its way somewhere in the distance.
Yep. Something, having cake and eating it, something.
Yeah. Along those lines for sayings.
I've never understood that. Why would you have cake and not eat it? That's against the very principle of cake.
I think introducing the whole cake thing is needlessly complicated. It's basically like, it's like buying someone a gift and then keeping it. It's like consuming. It kind of makes sense.
It depends what the gift is. If I bought it for them and then decided actually I like it and kept it, I'd be quite happy.
Well, and just told them that you'd posted it and it had obviously got lost in the post.
Or
blame it on the
Royal
Mail.
Something else.
Yeah, don't feel so guilty now.
Like,
it's not.
Then again, I'd probably just get them what I'd got them originally, but I'd just keep one for myself and they could have one and then we could discuss how good it was.
That's conspicuous consumerism you've got going on
there.
That
really sounds like you've done that before.
Maybe.
Not everyone can just... Have you done it? Have you done it to anyone here?
No.
Oh, good. Okay. But yeah, if you can afford to get your own copy of a thing and pass them, fine. Do that, John. Clearly you're rolling in it over all up in there. Have you been reading Private Eye, which is...
No, I haven't actually.
Which is pay what you want.
Pay what you want.
As long as it's over 50p, apparently. It's really good. It's Brian K. Vaughan. It's the nearest thing to a other bright. His voice is very clearly in both.
Yeah, and it's, he's a writer with a very distinct voice. Yeah. And again, one of the things I like about Saga is that Fiona Staples is a very distinctive artist. And the thing I do like is that I don't think they're going to do it either, is there's not been any sort of fill-in issues to allow her to catch up. Image seem to have adopted this thing now whereby they just have seasons, which allows, I know in the case of Sex Criminals, it's still running a bit behind, but what it means is that basically you will normally get, and this has happened with Saga, you just get 6 straight months where you get the book regular of clockwork, and then they get a break and get to catch up, and then you get a few months down the line another 6 issues.
I think that's something that individual creative teams decide, but it's a model that works.
Yeah, yes. It's a model that works a lot. I think especially with TV now being so much of a big thing, I think actually it is quite interesting to see it carry over into comics.
I just realised you said TV, not TB.
Yeah, TB's not as big a thing.
Yeah, we don't really want TB to carry over.
Although, you know, if anti-vaxxers have their way, maybe it'll make a proper comeback.
Just don't hang out with badgers.
Yeah, don't hang out with badgers.
Bad badgers.
But you can wear badges. That's a different thing. See, I didn't always understand that badgers and badges are two different things. Badges are like the thing with the, I was going to say beard with a white streak, but that's James. They're the animal, aren't they?
Yes.
And badges are the things that have nice designs on that you can stick on things.
Yep.
They have designs on, you can stick them on things.
Yeah, exactly. But they're two different things. Just what I wanted to mention while I remember, we won't talk about it loads. We won't talk about it at all, actually. But because you mentioned
except
Sex Criminals, except for right now, you mentioned Sex Criminals, and we didn't mention last week, maybe the news broke as I was editing, but Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick have just sort of nailed a TV production deal, which is pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
It is amazing, but I'm also, I don't know if there are any networks. I don't know. I mean, Stars will pretty much show anything. So maybe they'd be quite good for something like Sex Criminals, but it seems
Stars.
It's where Spartacus was. He's underplaying it, but they've had some really good shows.
Yeah, they are a really good network. Even though I've never watched any of their shows.
Wasn't Blade a Stars thing?
No, no, it was Spike TV. CW Spike TV.
Right.
But I'll be more excited if they announce Bitch Planet as a TV series. I will properly go through the roof on that one.
I just think it's nice. They seem like nice people.
Yeah, they are. Well, I say they are. I don't know. I've never met them. They could be arseholes, but they're very talented people.
So you only play Tomb Raider so that you can murder Lara Croft, and Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick could be arseholes. This is going really well, John. You really have to redeem yourself at some point. Oh, listener, sorry, thinking about it, the thing about him only wanting to murder Lara Croft, that might have been before we started recording, so I probably shouldn't have mentioned it, but it's out there now, so you're just going to have to deal with it when you hear his voice.
It was a space reference.
Yes.
I think anyone who's watched Space will probably get that reference.
Oh, okay.
Not as many people as you think have watched Space.
You're the second person who's made a weird space reference today. A friend of mine who John actually knows, Alex, who we used to talk about quite a lot on the Momcast, made a Twiglets reference earlier on today, which is a space reference.
Twiglets make him violent.
Exactly. He said that, and I was like, you're a very odd man, Alex, because I couldn't remember. Yes, so Saga's good.
Yes.
It is worth looking up, The Private Eye. And the good thing about that is it's going to be like a self-contained story. It's like a 9 or 10 issue thing.
Yeah.
It's really good, so... What else, John?
Next I have Descender by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. This is issue 1. Now, I really did enjoy this book, but I think I might be waiting for the trade simply because there are so many Image books on my standing order. I just can't afford them all.
But it's $2.99, John. That's hardly anything.
It's super cheap.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the thing. I think that's where Image have hit their sweet spot, is they are putting most of their books out at $2.99. And okay, so occasionally the paper quality is a bit sort of like, there are a couple of my issues of Witches that have fingerprints on them. But the quality you get in a $2.99 book, it's brilliant, the stuff they've got coming out. I think the only writer Image don't have on their payroll at the moment is Garth Ennis.
Have you thought about burning off your fingernails, your fingerprints?
I'm not John Doe.
Well, it might...
Just wipe with pineapple, it'd be fine.
Wipe the comic with pineapple?
No, work with pineapple.
Work with pineapple.
If you... the enzymes in pineapple destroy the top layer of skin, so people who wear pineapples don't have any fingerprints.
I did not know that. That's amazing. So
that sounds
pineapple
like something
workers...
that would be in a like Law and Order or episode of Hannibal. Or something.
So pineapple workers are basically the best criminals.
Yeah,
then,
absolutely.
Presumably, as long as presumably it doesn't remove their DNA.
So basically,
so as long as it isn't a spunk based crime, they're probably all right.
Yes, they'll be okay. All right.
So basically, what you're saying is the man from Del Monte could never be caught.
Well, that's why he was just the man from Del Monte.
Because nobody knew who he was, because he didn't have any fingerprints.
And everywhere he went, murders happened.
Yeah, but pineapple was delicious.
So
I'm scared now.
What was Descender? What is it about, John?
It's...
You read this as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll let you say what it's about, because I'm still not entirely sure.
I really liked it. Mm-hmm. Just now I have quite a big fear of robots.
Oh, yeah, you do.
I do. And this book heavily features robots. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler at all. It reminded me of the, that's not the Day the Earth Stood Still. Oh, it's gone from my brain.
But is that sort of a
classic kind of, it's something very odd has just landed and.
Gort. Yeah, it turns up. And,
yeah. And they don't know what it is and what's going to happen next, and then it sort of jumps ahead in time. It was really interesting. It was a really intriguing book. The thing that really caught me about this, and I did read this on Comixology on my phone, but actually seeing it in person, because John's got the physical copy, the art is incredible.
Yeah.
It really is gorgeous. Just really clean, like watercolour.
Like to read it physically. I don't know if I could have read this on digital or
it worked
enjoyed
digital.
It in the same
way. I did enjoy it.
I mean, it's still got the sort of the framing that makes it very easy to just flick between various bits, but it's Dustin Nguyen's art is really nice. It's this sort of like, it's quite muted and sort of watercolours. It's really, really nice. And it's also good because it's the first Jeff Lemire book I've read where he's doing the writing and he's not doing his own artwork. Mm-hmm. So it gives him a bit more of a chance to focus on just telling a story. But it's very weird. You can still sort of see what it would look like if Jeff Lemire wrote it.
Your comic's falling apart.
Yeah, the staple came out of the middle.
No. Well, that's the problem, you see. You're being all smug about having it in physical copy. I wonder if maybe that's because it looks very painterly.
Yeah.
So maybe having it as a physical object feels more normal because paint looks more organic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know if that's probably nonsense.
I mean, there's some amazing double page spreads in it. Like the sort of, and the way they reveal something about one of the characters in particular is very sort of, even though it's annoying because you all
subtle.
Kind of knew it already,
yeah,
but when it actually happens, it's still like, oh, that's a really good sort of
reveal.
And it's kind of annoying, obviously, that is pretty much on the cover anyway, so
yeah. I mean, the cover you've got is the cover I got, which is basically it. I don't think it's a, I think a few people are mistakenly identifying it as a ripoff of the AI poster, the Steven Spielberg film. Is it Stanley Kubrick Steven Spielberg
movie?
Whereas actually I think it's a deliberate homage to it, because it's it centers on a small boy, doesn't it, like that film does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's revealed on the front, I think it's revealed on all of the covers actually, that he's a bit robot-y. You're not sure if he's a cyborg at that point or if he's all robot or what. That's maybe revealed in the comic. But so that's kind of given away. But yeah, it's a very clear riff on AI, that cover.
Yeah, I mean, it's got all the sort of trademarks of a Jeff Lemire book, in that it's sort of very heartfelt, very sort of, I don't know, what would you say?
Well,
it is very heartfelt.
Yeah, no, it is human touch. Jeff Lemire does emotion extremely well. So different events that happen, you feel what's happening and you feel it for the characters as well. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the next issue. You should definitely go and get it, listener. Yeah.
It's a far-flung future science fiction thing, isn't it? But with human, it's a human civilization, but it's...
Again, because he's also got... and then it reveals at the back, because there's the adverts for all the books Image have coming out in the autumn, because they think that far ahead. And there's one called Plutonia, which is by Jeff Lemire, Emmy Lennox, and Jordi Belair. And there's also AD, which is After Death, which is Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire. So I
Jim Lee is doing the art on that, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that will be, again, I don't know, it'll probably just sell like hotcakes. So, but it's, pretty much there, just going, okay, Scott Snyder and Jeff Lemire doing a book together. Yeah, I'll buy that.
Well, interestingly, I didn't get on that well with that comic. And I haven't really read a lot of Jeff Lemire stuff anyway. But the reason I didn't get on with it was specifically, I really like Dustin Nguyen's art. And I think he did Wild. I think it might have been him who did Wildcats, who did a whole bunch of Wildcats. I'm not sure, but I think I'm used to his art being very finely detailed.
Yeah.
I got two Jeff Lemire books this week, and I'll talk about the other one in a bit. And both of them featured artists that I'm very used to seeing with very clear lines and stuff, doing very watercolory, very muted palette work, which is something I associate with Jeff Lemire's self-drawn stuff. And for me, the color palette actually, I imagine if you're tuned into it, like you guys clearly were, it looks great. But for me, it just, I couldn't pick stuff out. It all felt very tonally flat for me. So I could tell it was pretty, but story-wise, I was having a bit of trouble with it.
As good as Dustin Nguyen's art is in that book, it looks a bit like Jeff Lemire's art, because I imagine that Jeff Lemire has literally just sat there and drawn sketches and just sent them over and gone, do something like this. And in most cases, it's just like, right, well, I'll just...
Oh, I didn't get that feeling at all.
I don't know. It's the way in which it's very sort of light on details, very sketchy lines, but sort of a lot of shading, a lot of focusing on faces and things like that.
I do wonder what the level of... When you're dealing with a drawer, like Jeff Lemire, and you're collaborating with them, I do wonder what it's like when they're writing for an artist, because it still looks like the artist's own work, but it's very definitely got that kind of thing going on as well. I don't know.
I mean, the other thing is, I'm not any disrespect to Jeff Lemire, but I don't think he could have drawn this book and it have the same sort of feel. I think it's a bit outside. I mean, I know he did
Trillium,
there's a lot
of tech and detail,
which I love,
and stuff,
but it's the sort of, it's more just the scale in places of, like, especially where, at one point, I'll just call them the invaders turn up, and there's a very much Day the Earth is Still moment, and it's just like, oh crap, and it's a huge double page spread, and it looks amazing, but I just don't think, I know what Jeff Lemire's art is like, and I don't think he'd have been able to make it look quite as good as it does if it was him, and I think it wouldn't have quite had the same effect on the book. And I think actually Dustin Nguyen's a better choice for this book than Jeff Lemire would have been doing it himself.
He draws a very cute little boy, doesn't he?
Yes.
Jane,
yes.
The robot thing.
Mm-hmm.
What's more scary? Is it like normal animal-sized or human-sized robots, but lots of them? Or because in this one, the to the extent that I read it, it's quite a big. It's like vast. It's like Galactus-sized.
That we trust.
Right, like, so no one's trusting a giant robot that size.
No, so, they're more scary.
Are you going to go and watch Age of Ultron and it's going to just be like the world's worst horror movie to
I'm
you?
Not going to watch it. I think that's pretty...
Nobody trusts Ultron anyway, surely.
Well, they'll probably do it at the beginning of the film and then it all goes a bit wrong. It's like Brother Eye. It's like the whole idea of whenever you build a robot to do something, you know it's going to go wrong. Okay? The Matrix, Brother Eye, Skynet, everything.
Actually, though, actually, the, I mean, the, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But the robots in the Matrix, see, it kind of, it wasn't, they didn't just go wrong. It wasn't their fault. We made them that way because we made them like really clever and then we treated them like slaves. And then one of them got flat out murdered by it.
Yeah.
Look, all I'm saying is everyone should watch the Animatrix. Don't need to watch the sequels. Just watch the Animatrix.
The Animatrix,
it's beautiful.
Was, some of it was good. Some of it wasn't so good. But some of it I really liked.
How bloody dare you?
What? The whole thing isn't... It has good bits and not so good bits.
Yeah, okay. I mean, whatever.
It has, the bits that are good are really good.
I feel like the moment when I could have been really super invested in the Animatrix has passed. So, Jane, what have you got to talk about?
I obviously read Descender as well, but also read Little... Big Man Plans. I'm as bad as the people in the book. And it's from Image Comics.
Who's it by?
Eric Powell and Tim Weish.
Weish.
Yeah.
Okay.
Issue 1 of 4. So it's going to be quite an intense book. Big Man Plans is about a man who has dwarfism. And it's the setup of his story. So basically what has happened in his life. He grew up in, looks like, rural America in 1940s, 50s, maybe a little bit later. And, you know, everyone's just taking the piss out of him because he's a boy with dwarfism. His father is the only person that's ever shown any kind of tender love or compassion other than his younger sister. And his mother was a bit of a cold bitch and quite snooty as well. So... didn't really like the fact that she had a son that wasn't like every other boy. You learn about what happened to his family, what happened to him, and why he sort of, at the beginning of the book, there's he's in a bar being mocked, and then he kind of pays them back for mocking him.
Someone tumbled this, I think, and it's a really good transition. It sets the scene for quite a violent book, maybe?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So we learn about his life, what he's done, where he's been, how he's kind of built up his reputation, and it's pretty horrific. And it ends with him going to his old hometown. So there's obviously, you don't really know what's going to happen next. Being a four-part series is going to be quite quick, I imagine, and pretty violent. It's not as violent as Olympus Has Fallen, as you've just told me.
Oh, Olympus Has Fallen, though, that film.
It's not full of blood that much, but it is pretty horrific. There are scenes in it that made me think of Rorschach from...
Rorschach from... Okay.
Rorschach from The Watchmen. Yeah, just like, you know... alpha dominance, I'm in charge of everything. Really, really, really well written. The art's incredible. It's really, really, like, nice, old feeling, and the violence feels really violent in it. It doesn't feel like you're just reading, you're just looking at a picture. It feels like, oh, God, that's actually happened.
Does it look quite painterly as well, though? It's quite detailed.
Yeah, no, absolutely,
It's quite chunky and
very, painterly. Again, it's another watercolour pencil.
Because I notice that one of the panels I just saw was of a erect member.
No.
Wasn't it?
No.
I could have sworn that I saw a penis in that book.
So what? So John maybe didn't see the penis in Saga, and
do you mean when I was flicking
that...
through earlier?
Yeah.
Or just now?
Earlier when you were going back.
Oh, yeah, it's not erect.
It's just a penis.
It's just a penis.
Just whatever they can do to get it past Apple.
I feel like I've seen a lot of penises in comics this week, but actually I didn't think I've seen that many. It might just be wishful thinking.
I've not seen any penises in any comics this week.
Okay.
Anyway,
I'm clearly buying the wrong sort of comic.
Yeah, clearly. It's really good. It's only 4 issues, so you should... It was £1.99 on Comixology, whatever it translates into dollars. And I'm sure it's only £2.99 on physical form in the shelves, on the shops.
I think it was bagged. I think it was bagged at Forbidden Planet, which might be because of the penis.
Oh, really?
Well, they were pretty slow on bagging the humans, but the humans got bagged and that had a penis.
But that had more than just a penis. That had a full-on splurge moment.
Oh, no, it did, didn't it?
This hasn't got anything anywhere near as normal as that.
Jane went right to the precipice and then backed right off. She's like, Well, it's, I mean, yes, it's pornographic, but it's also something that everybody does.
Yeah, exactly. It's just,
well, not
like,
everybody, but
actually,
a lot of people.
It's just, that's normal. It doesn't have anything. I mean, it's got a few bits, but not anything. I mean, Saga, there's issues of Saga that have had more graphic scenes.
Yes.
Yeah, and yet somehow it was still something that was smaller than a postage stamp that got it banned off Apple.
Oh, even that, there's been other things in Saga.
Yeah, I know, there's been a fault.
Banned. Someone just got confused. I think most of the time when stuff gets taken off systems for decency reasons these days, it's normally someone gets confused. They don't realize it's going to have the impact that it's a whole other subject. So, big man plans.
Yes, I highly recommend it. It's only going to be 4 issues. You should definitely pick up the first issue, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it as much as I did.
Cool, cool. It did look pretty good. I saw it on the shelf, thought it looked okay, but clearly didn't pick it up for whatever reason. And then that transition that I saw, the bit that you talked about that someone had shared on the internet, just made me think, oh man, I should have bought that.
You can get it on Comixology.
I don't know though, it all looks really complicated.
I'm sure Image do sell books digitally that are like DRM free.
I mean, and I'm kind of busy at the moment as well.
Oh, it is kind of late and I need to go to the toilet.
So that does sound really good, yes, actually. It's quite cool. And it came out of nowhere. I hadn't really heard about it.
It's kind of my, because I was looking at what I was going to get this week and it was my backup book in a sense that I had sort of thought, oh, that kind of looks good. But what I did want to buy didn't actually get released this week. So I ended up buying it.
What was it?
Neverboy.
I picked up a few comics this week. I ended up spending loads of money and then not really enjoying a couple of my books.
I hate it when that happens.
I was reading them today and I might not have been very happy today, so that might be why. First one, well, most of them are things I didn't really know much about at all. First one was Black Cross, which is the first of the Project Superpowers books from Dynamite that's even remote. I don't even know what... I mean, what is Project Superpowers? Do you know, John? Can you explain it quickly?
I don't know. I was just going to say it's a project to give people superpowers, I guess.
I think it's some sort of superhero generating scheme or something that Dynamite are doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems to involve a lot of Alex Ross paintings. As I understand it involves a lot of Alex Ross paintings, but I don't know how exactly everything comes about. But this is this caught my eye because it's written by Warren Ellis. And his name is such that it'll still always make me pick up a book and have a look, even if it's not something I'd have normally touched. You know, at the time when he started doing stuff at Avatar, no one was looking at Avatar books on the shelf. Well, people were, but not the sort of people who read decent comics. Super judgmental, Nick. Shut up. Anyway, so this isn't from Avatar. This is from Dynamite, and it's a Project Superpowers book, and it's called Black Cross. It's written by Warren Ellis with art by Cotton Worley, who I've never heard of before.
That's an awesome name.
It is a cool name, isn't it? And I think colors by Morgan Hickman, I think is the name. And it's, I don't know if it ties into a larger universe. There are things that I didn't quite understand and characters I didn't know and I wasn't sure if I was supposed to know. But part of that's probably just the fact that Warren Ellis is a proper writer and introduces elements and explains them later like a proper writer does. Doesn't always happen in comics and films these days, but it's set in a small town. It's got detectives. It's got a weird murder. It starts on an almost typically Warren Ellis cinematic scene of someone killing themselves but under unusual circumstances, and it's pretty creepy and cool. And it's got a fake medium, it's got a few different threads in it. It's got a fake medium in it called Lady Satan, who starts having weird things happen. I think at this point it might be a bit of a trope to have fake mediums suddenly have
real experiences.
Yeah. I believe the seminal work Ghost, starring Whoopi Goldberg, might have been the first place I was really aware of it happening.
Started the trend.
Yeah. And ever since, anyone who is anyone has had a story with that sort of thing happening in it. I can literally only think of those two examples now that I say that though. And so it's got her in, and it's got another chap who is called Rob or Bob. depending on what sort of a mood he's in, who is in witness protection, who clearly used to be a criminal or involved with organized criminals and is now in witness protection in Black Cross. And there's this suggestion that there is something murdery. There's a suggestion from the detectives that there's something murdery and horrible following a route across a part of America, and Black Cross is the next decent-sized small town, like the next town, I think they would call it town worth its name because it's only very small, that's on the route. And I think all of these characters are there. So you've got the police drama, the detective-y police drama element there. You've also got the slightly superhero-y, super-powered-y bit, and you've also got the organized crime thing. It's not entirely clear how they're all going to converge at this point, but these are all elements that Warren Ellis is pretty good at handling. He does really good work with that sort of TV style detective, that gritty TV style detective thing as well. He really nails that stuff. So,
have you ever read his Gun Machine, the novel he wrote?
That's the second one.
It's really good. It's a lot less gruesome than Crooked Little Vane, and it's just a really, really good police procedural detective novel. And it's like you say, he writes that sort of thing really well. And just, I can imagine that also doing in any comic he'd written, he's very good at just having that kind of characters playing off each other.
I really like the sound of, I like the sound of it more than, because I read Crooked Little Vane, and while it was a perfectly decent read, it seemed to be more a collection of Warren Ellis tics than something that I could really enjoy as a novel on its own. Yeah. Whereas a crime, like a straight up detective novel, I think I'd probably prefer more from him. A little bit, there'll be a little bit more. It's like when a comedian first writes a novel. Certainly it used to be the case when a comedian first starts writing novels, the first one is nearly all them being really funny.
Yeah.
And dropping loads of jokes in, some of which you recognize from their routines. And their second one's nearly always this amazingly serious piece of work. Notice to have David Baddiel, Charlie Higson, Rob Newman, all of them did exactly that. So
I think the thing with Crooked Little Vane as well as Warren Ellis always said when he wrote it, he was getting a lot of pressure from his agent that he should write a book. And so he basically wrote 10,000 words and handed it to his agent and went, go on, sell that, thinking it's the most foul, disgusting thing ever. Mm. No one's ever going to want to buy that. And he said, apparently, like, the first or second company that looked at it were like, yep, we'll take it.
There's a lot of ideas in it.
Yeah. It's a good book. And I think Gun Machine as a novel is better.
Anyway, so I'll have to read it. I do want to. I just haven't got around to it. Partly because I didn't like Crooked Little Vane that much. And I don't read novels very often because they're really hard. I only read novels in the bath now, and I hardly ever have time
to have a bath
for baths because we're modern people and we don't have a lot of time for the simple pleasures, do we really?
And reading a book in the bath is terrifying
because you're worried you're going to drop. Well, I mean,
yeah,
I normally read.
Can't do it.
Are you talking about reading a book on a digital device?
No,
just a normal
book.
One.
Yeah. Clumsy. I will drop it. I will accidentally like knock a whole bookcase into a bath if it's near there.
I've got to say, the feng shui in a house where you've been allowed to run rampant must be interesting.
I am clumsy, but I'm not clumsy. As in, I'm quite agile, nimble. But the minute that I'm in a situation where I could, like, I know being clumsy is going to be an issue, like dropping things in the bath, I always end up managing to drop everything in a bath. It's ridiculous.
The one that always got me is one of my friends. I once lent her my copies of the Ring series, the three novels, had them all in hardback, really nice hardbacks with clear dust covers that sort of put an effect on the book. And my friend managed, while reading the second one, to drop that in the bath, which she apologised for, and then told me that she'd also dropped the third one in the bath while reading that. And I was like, so after having dropped the first book in the bath, that's fine, I'll just read the second one, the third one, and
people just don't
again.
Think. What sort of person does that? What sort of person doesn't just go out and buy you another copy without telling you?
Them?
No.
Aww.
People are awful.
To be fair, the books were dry. They were fine. They don't actually look that bad at all. It's just, I mean, like, I bought them ages ago now, so.
So anyway, this is a pretty good comic. I didn't really know what to expect from it. I did flick through it and see that it was a nice looking book. What's interesting about Cotton Wally's art with Morgan Hickman's colors is it looks very much its own thing, but it's also got a really grounded, realistic but scratchy style to it, like Alex Maleev's work sometimes is, which is a really, if you're going to look a little bit like someone else, Alex Maleev is a really good artist to look like. It's more fluid and loose and less static than Alex Maleev's art can sometimes be, but often isn't, but can sometimes be. So like better Alex Maleev art. Anyway, it does a really good job of capturing Warren Ellis's storytelling, because Warren Ellis is one of those writers whose voice comes through really visually. So as much as everything he does is a collaboration, you still know just from looking at a page that you might be reading a Warren Ellis book. There are a lot of writers who do similar things, and a lot of artists who now have learned a lot from people that he's worked with in the past. But there is a very you recognize the sorts of transitions and the sort of cinematic way that he tells a story. It looks really nice. It's a really nice looking book. It's interesting as well. I mean, I'm going to have to get the second issue just to try and work out how these different interesting elements all intersect. It's pretty good. I like it. It was $3.99. Let's just say I don't give a shit about that anymore. Okay. I mean, it's not true.
That
but sometimes
was what kind of put me off, because I did see it yesterday and I was sort of umming and ahhing, and I was like, no, it's $3.99.
Sometimes you just get to a point when you're getting older where you just have to accept that you're going to lose some of these battles.
Yeah.
And for me, $3.99 is clearly one of those things. I don't think I'm ever going to be okay with it, though. Spider-Woman number 5. Might as well be a Spider-Woman number 1, to be honest. I think it was a little bit odd that they started this story right in the middle of this comic, right in the middle of Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Which was unusual, because it was already an ongoing story. And I think this was clearly their intended number 1 that they were aiming for. I don't know what the scheduling, because they must have known this was coming when they started the comic. It's $3.99. I'm sorry, Nick, from a couple of years ago. I couldn't stay strong for long enough.
You've accepted but haven't embraced.
Yeah, yes, I think that's it. I'm in the acceptance phase.
Yeah.
No longer in the pathetic, long-winded bargaining phase that I was in.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you've accepted but you haven't embraced it. Some things, you pick your battles, Nick. You pick your battles.
This book has been getting a lot of buzz in advance, because like a lot of the other female spider books that have been coming out, spinning out of Spider-Verse, the character got... Did I make a pun?
You did.
I didn't even do it on purpose.
I liked it.
The characters had a quite major redesign. So there's a very social network shareable bunch of art that was coming out before the actual comic came out. I'm thinking mainly of the Spider-Gwen outfit, which I think the character Spider-Gwen caught people's attention, but the art that was spreading across the internet before we even really knew very much about her at all is really what's caught fire. And that's a great comic, by the way. And with this, Spider-Woman has been in the same outfit. Jessica Drew as Spider-Woman has been in the same outfit for decades, I think probably since the beginning, with very few redesigns, very few, like segues into other outfits. Segue's not the right word. And so she's had a bit of a she's had quite a lot of a redesign. Her outfit's really different. It's a little bit like the Catwoman redesign that Darwyn Cook, I think, did a few years ago. It is a little bit like that. And Javier Rodriguez, who's doing the art on this, they're clearly pulling from the same well of influences a little bit with this. It's very bold. It's a very modern outfit. I love it, though. It's a really nice costume she's got. It kind of looks like something that someone could actually practically wear on the street, but it also It also looks kind of action hero-y as well. I quite like it. John has an opinion, though. I can tell.
I'm just thinking. You can tell when they design these things. They're like, right, can this be made using cosplay?
Well, there's that as well. Yeah. Although there isn't anything I'm discovering that can't be made using, like, can't be made as That's a cosplay true. Outfit.
Yeah, now. It's got to that point now.
It's written by Dennis Hopeless, who I really, really like anyway. He's got a real great facility with outlandish characters in outlandish situations who still talk kind of like normal people, which I really like. And Javier Rodriguez, I've definitely seen his art somewhere. I don't know if it was on She-Hulk or somewhere else, but it looks very different here. It's unusual in that the art, Javier Rodriguez is doing art and colors, but is being inked by Alvaro Lopez. So it looks different. It's slightly more detailed than art I've seen by him before. And one of the key quotes towards the beginning, Jessica Drew has come out of, she's quit the Avengers, she's quit being in S.H.I.E.L.D., she's trying to be a normal person. But the first half of this book is basically trying to explore what that actually means when you're a superhero. Because normally, when they want to be a normal person, it means they're quitting being a superhero. But she was brought up by people who did experiments on her. She's been in and out of one organization after another throughout her entire life.
Yeah.
So the way she puts it is her plan now is helping the innocent by hospitalizing the guilty. So basically, it's almost a response to seeing characters like Spider-Man and Daredevil in the Avengers. Well, not so much Daredevil, but seeing characters that you're used to seeing beating up street criminals and that being really where they're best placed. Suddenly being in every cosmic crossover and stuff like that. It feels like it's written a little bit as a reaction to that. But she's not very good at it because she keeps getting... It's almost...
Hospitalized?
Well, no, it's... No, she's not Hawkeye. She keeps hospitalizing people. It's almost farcical, actually, that in the first part of the book, you find out that she keeps getting in the way of the police and causing more damage than, like, when she breaks up a jewel heist, she ends up causing more damage by throwing someone through a window than would have been stolen in the first place and stuff like that. She doesn't, because she's never really done this street level crime fighting.
She doesn't
before,
understand the proportions.
So into that, Ben Urich, who is one of the best supporting characters in the Marvel Universe, one of the best normal people in the Marvel Universe, who's the proper journalist alongside all of the sensationalists, comes in and tries to get her interested in a sort of a street-level crime because he's been watching her and seeing that she's not very good and at being a normal crime fighter. And she doesn't want to. She kind of wants to do everything on her own terms. And the story does really interesting things to get her more invested in what's clearly going to be her ongoing mission for the next few issues. It's a really good first issue of a superhero comic. The art is really bold. There are some really nice narrative, like artistic tricks trying to do spider movement. I think the first splash page is the setup for a kick that she's going to do, and there's like a sweeping arrow showing where her leg's going to go, so that follows really nicely through to the next page. It really works well. I know that lots of artists are doing this sort of thing now. I think that David Ayer on Hawkeye is the one who gets credited with doing it the most, and everyone thinks everyone else is doing it because he did it. But I think there are a few people who've been doing really interesting things with art at Marvel Comics and in comics in general for a little while now. And I think Rodriguez is one of those people. It's pretty good. Really like the first issue. $3.99 is a lot of money for a spandex soap opera comic. But I like this first issue. So I'll probably pick up the next one. Hawkeye, all new Hawkeye, is another $3.99 book. I got the Scotty Young cover because apparently it doesn't matter how often I say, oh, I don't think this is as good anymore, the Scotty Young thing. I'm still a sucker for them. I nearly bought the Princess Leia one as well, but I didn't. There's only so far I'll go. This is a relaunch of the Hawkeye book. I wasn't aware that the last Matt Fraction David Ayer issue had come out. but it must have done, I guess.
I was aware only because I've been waiting for the fourth volume of their run, and it was meant to come out at the end of December, and they put it back to the beginning of March, and then put it back to the middle of June. Mm-hmm. So I was a bit upset with that, but that was the only reason I knew the run had ended, was because I was like, yes, they'll finally release the trade.
I'm way behind in that run, actually, but this
me
is
too,
the,
funnily enough.
This is the first part of a 5-part run. I flicked through it. It caught my eye. It's written by Jeff Lemire with art by Ramon Perez and colors, I think, by Ian Herring. And it's a relatively straightforward story. Hawkeye and Hawkeye, his protege slash perfectly good Hawkeye superhero in her own right, Kate Bishop. Is that how I think that's
yep.
her name?
Kate
are
Bishop.
Are on a mission. They're doing a favor for Maria Hill. They're on a mission in I guess it's a Hydra base. I can't remember. They really do kill a lot of dudes. They're not bothered about arrowing henchmen in the face.
To be fair, when your main weapon is a bow. An arrow is kind of a bit difficult not to kill dudes, given that the whole point of arrows is that they've got a point.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
That goes through people and usually injures or maims them or they kills them.
They could have suction cups like on the Scotty Young cover. Anyway, so there's this mission going on in this base. The action is all really nice. Ramon Perez is a great artist. I know his work from a John Carter series he did at Marvel, which was really pretty. The choreography of the action and the way the pages are laid out, it's very bold, very clean lined artwork, and it's lush. And the way color is used in the bits where there's line work, where they're just doing the superheroing, is really, really nice as well. Very bold, like when they're inside and the alarms are going off, everything's red, and then when they're outside, it's very different. And it's really nicely color-coded. The reason I'm being a bit distractible when I talk about the art is that at the same time, there's this other story interwoven with it, which is about Clint Barton, who is Hawkeye, and his brother... What's his name? John?
I don't know.
Ah, his brother, who I'm sure has been around for a little while, but I only really know him from the Matt Fraction at Dave Aya run. It's about them going from one foster home to another and a situation with them. All of that stuff, you know, I mentioned that I kind of had a bit of trouble with Dustin Gwynn's art.
Yeah.
On the book Descender. You guys are talking about on Descender. All of that art, it's still Ramon Perez, but it's got this wash color on it, and it looks really similar to the Iron Descender, which
okay.
is why I think that this is one of those situations where the drawther who's writing the book has had some influence over the way it looks. And actually, intercut with the present day, more traditional line work, it works really, really well. I worried when I started reading it, because it kind of opens on one of those scenes. I thought, well, I'm clearly having a bit of trouble with this watercolor with a soft palette thing, because I can't really differentiate between foreground and background that well and stuff in it. But it works really well as a sepia toned background. It's a really, really good first issue. I think this first 5-issue run is going to be clearly the way it's flashback, present day, means that this is going to be a device they use for the first 5 issues, and it's all going to pay off somehow, which will be nice. It's a nice looking book, and the superhero-y stuff is great as well. The other book I read this week was Nameless number 2. Still $2.99. Thank you, Grant Morrison. It's written by Grant Morrison with art by Chris Burnham, and I think colours by Nathan Fairbairn.
Yeah, Nathan Fairbairn is a colourist.
I talked about the first issue last time when it was out. Not last time on the podcast, last time when the first issue was out. It's about, the first issue is weird, the second issue isn't quite as weird. It's basically about a guy called Mr. Nameless and a mission to space to stop an asteroid that is coming to destroy the Earth, except that Mr. Nameless, who the first issue was all about him being recruited, is an occult specialist. He has been recruited late in the game to this team because their occult specialist has become unavailable to them. it transpires in this first issue. So we're seeing a lot of this mission through his eyes. This asteroid is going to hit the Earth. It's a very Bruckheimer thing.
It's
Armageddon, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a very Armageddon setup, except that there are weird symbols, weird occult symbols that they recognize on the asteroid or whatever it is. So okay. That's why he's been involved. I personally, I mean, art-wise, it's gorgeous.
It's Chris Burnham. Chris Burnham's probably one of my favourite artists working in the industry today, and it's because he draws stuff like this. On Facebook, I summed Nameless up as if you took Constantine, Armageddon, and I can't remember what the other thing was, you just chuck it all in a blender and let Chris Burnham finger paint with the results.
I think this is going to be quite a short review, which is good because we've been here for ages. But so you've clearly already got your particular way of putting it, which you just did. I've written down, and no, we're not going to get into a conversation about this. Fuck you, John, frankly, because I know what you're like when I say we're not going to get into a conversation about this, but we really don't have time.
Okay.
I've written, it's what happens when Grant Morrison watches Prometheus and says, fuck it, I can do weirder and better. Because it's basically about going into space to meet God or to reckon with God.
Yeah.
Or to reckon with the divine.
Yeah.
That's what it's effectively about at this point. And it's so weird and great. Chris Burnham's art, I mean, it's Grant Morrison knows how to work with someone like him because...
Well, yeah, they've worked together before.
They have
anyway,
worked together on Batman, haven't they? But his art's very individual, but it's clearly heavily influenced by Frank Quitely. There's just no getting around that. It's very much his own thing. He's got his own style, but the level of detail and stuff, they're drawing from a very similar well, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to say something that some people might think is controversial, but I think Chris Burnham's more consistent than Frank Quitely.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
A bit more kind of rough around the edges, but I think he is generally, he's a lot more detailed as well.
It looks more organic. His art looks more organic than Frank Quitely's, I think.
There was a book that Chris Burnham drew called Key of Z, which was written by Claudio Sanchez and Chandra Escher for Boom Studios. Mm-hmm. And there are some panels in that that are just, if you can ever get Chris Burnham to draw someone killing zombies, get Chris Burnham to draw someone killing zombies. His artwork is so detailed, and it means that whenever you get to the really gruesome bits, they're super fucking gruesome.
There's like a family of artists, and they've all got their own very individual style. But I see them, I see them as having a very like. I see them as a family because their art's similarly detailed. Tony Moore is one of those guys who started The Walking Dead. Who did Frankencastle for Punisher for Marvel.
His artwork, especially the early issues of The Walking Dead, is absolutely some of the detail in it's amazing.
And Quitely's in there. So is Chris Burnham. I think Chris Burnham's like a halfway point between Frank Quitely and Nick Pitara.
Yep.
Who you wouldn't connect with those guys because his style is flat out cartoony. Mm.
I can see where you're coming from. Pitara's Manhattan Projects.
Manhattan Projects, yeah.
Yeah, I can see what you mean about Chris Burnham being the halfway point between the two. I think I actually agree with that.
But this has gone from weird dream sequencing. And I kind of knew, knowing what Morrison's like, that it would level out a certain amount by the second issue because throws a lot of weird into every first issue.
That was the thing I said. It was Constantine, Inception and Armageddon was my description of what the first issue of Nameless was. It was basically... The thing I like about Nameless is I don't think... In a weird way, all the ingredients that are put together to make it aren't original, but they're put together in a way that I don't think anyone's already done before.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, I love space horror, and I think throwing in the supernatural element to this just make it a lot more interesting.
I think the connection I made because of something David Wynne has always said about Prometheus in the times when we've talked about it, because he and I are both... people who enjoy Prometheus despite its flaws. And the thing he has said is that it's basically in the mountains of madness. which is a Lovecraftian,
At the Mountains
of Madness, which I've not read, but I know the reference, that it's basically that in space. And once you see it as basically that sort of schlock story, that makes sense. And that kind of is how I see this. That's what they're doing. There's a thing. They don't understand it. It seems like it's scientific, but I don't think it is scientific. Or there's definitely occult elements to it. And unknown to them, they think they're on a mission that is dangerous and high stakes, but unknown to them, everything's falling apart behind them as well.
Anyone know if this is a limited series or is it ongoing?
I don't. And I wondered if this first story was going to introduce, because it's named for the main character.
Yeah. It kind of feels like it's heading towards something, and I get the impression if this isn't ongoing at the end of the first arc, it's just going to throw out something completely game-changing that's going to send the story going off in a totally different direction. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing at the moment, I think, is just leading up to something much, much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that each issue seems to have, like, the way it just keeps putting in certain developments. It's like, oh, okay. So, like, the whole thing at the end of the first issue where it talks about the asteroid, and you're like, oh, okay. And then as you get into the story on this, it makes other reveals about what the asteroid is and what its purpose is. And it's like, okay, so I'm wondering what the next issue is going to bring with it.
Yeah, I really like Nameless. I thought it was, I'm thinking it's really good. And at $2.99, you can't say fairer than that. It's cheap as chips, mate. Cheap as chips.
Chips.
Which actually is more of a comment on how expensive chips are.
Actually, I think it's a lot cheaper than chips, probably.
It depends. There are different chip shops.
If you're at a subsidised place and, a subsidised canteen, they're normally a bit cheaper.
But then if you go somewhere like Big George's, where you just, like, you get so many chips for your chips, it's ridiculous.
And listen to that. Sounds like a Southampton specific.
It is.
That sounds like a Southampton specific reference. But actually, I think you'd find that in most big cities, there's probably a chippy, probably run by a Greek guy, called Big George's, or something
maybe,
like Big George's.
I don't know if they sell portions as Big George's does.
Just so you know, when you encounter a Big George's or a Nick's or any of those things in your town, it's not a chain. They're all individual people who come by the name completely naturally. And no George's are small, so it's kind of redundant. I don't know why they call them Big George's. I listened and watched a video this week, which was a talk by Kieran Gillen on Watchmen. I'm not going to go into details about it now, but if you liked Watchmen, if you just like storytelling and comics and stuff, even if you're not that familiar with Watchmen or you don't even love Watchmen that much, it's really worth listening to. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's very good. The show notes will be on the episode page, which is at weHaveIssues.net. I don't actually know what the / what the permalink to this specific episode is, but if you're listening to this episode, it should be relatively easy to find. The episodes also go up on SoundCloud and YouTube a little bit late, so that's not the best way to get them. You can also subscribe in your podcatcher of choice, like Pocket Casts or iTunes or the Apple iOS app that's for podcasts, all of those different places. And if you do like the show or you have any comments, please do leave a comment there. You can also talk to us online. There's a Issues Pod, which is the main Twitter account for this show. Jane is on Twitter at
Cover Jane.
John is on Twitter at
John Momb,
and with no H. And I'm on Twitter at Nixite, NIXSIGHT. There is a page for the podcast on Facebook where updates about new episodes and odd little comic-y things that I find on Facebook tend to go. That's We Have Issues on Facebook. Normally do that earlier in the show. Seems a bit weird putting it there, but we do have to go. It's good, isn't it? And I put on almost a radio voice, almost.
Yeah, I liked it. It's good.
Which is good because it immediately followed a complete linguistic car wreck by me, I think. So I think that's us, guys. It feels late. Does it feel late?
It is late. It's 7 o'clock.
It is late. Well, so we're old. We have to go to bed early.
And I are old.
I need to have my dinner.
Jane's a sprightly young thing.
I'm hungry.
But she burns a lot of energy because she's younger, so she has to eat more. Whereas I had a sneaky pepper army about 20 minutes before we started recording.
That is sneaky.
I was depressed. They're not even cheap at the moment in our workshop, but I got some anyway. I got one anyway, not some. I'm not a monster. So it remains for us to thank you, listener, for listening. Thank you, John, for popping in.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Jane, I'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.